Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for MyLowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Today's episode contains discussion of suicide and mental health challenges, which may be distressing for some listeners. If you or someone you know is struggling, please seek help from a professional or contact a crisis support service in your area. Viewer discretion is advised. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. Brent and Michaela here, along with my cousin, Matthew Wyatt. You guys, you'll see why we're so excited to have him on. He has multiple incredible stories, multiple angels to talk about, and I know that we will all learn something and be able to feel the love of our Father in Heaven through Matthew. So we are so excited. Matthew, go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit really quick and then get on with your story.
Okay. First of all, thank you guys for having me on here. If you notice my voice go in and out, don't worry about it. I'm 45. I'm not 14, but I'm just having some issues. I have been married for, it'll be 25 years in November, to my angel. And you'll hear why she's my angel. We have a 24-year-old daughter, and we live in Boise, Idaho, and I have no idea why. God called us to Texas to plant a church almost 4 years ago. The church is booming. And then I was walking the beach one day, and God said, hey, your season is done here. You need to go rest. And so now we're here, and we can't wait to see whose life we're going to be placed in, and they're going to be placed in our life. But, I know that there's going to be a content warning because I'm going to be getting into some stuff, but can we give a second content warning? Because I don't know if the internet can handle this much awesomeness between two Wyatts. And without any jokes aside, I think Wyatt is like the greatest name. And
you're not kidding,
Brent. We are robbed because we can't use it as a first name for kids because Wyatt doesn't work out. But Wyatt's just, anyways. That's where I'm at. Brent's my cousin. Our daughter is Michaela, which
I was gonna say, and not to mention, and you named your daughter after the coolest name ever.
So. Every time I see you, Michaela, on Facebook, I have to do a double take, and I'm like, did my daughter write something so brilliant? And then I'm like, oh, wait, the spelling's just a tiny bit different.
Yep.
But we were right, and our spelling, your parents are wrong. I also want to know, you guys to know how proud I am of both of you. Looking at or listening to these stories, I know you guys don't do it for yourselves, but you guys don't know how many lives this will change. And I love you both for it. So thank you for having me on here. And also, just to prove that I've been keeping up with your podcast, I just would like to say that I am a yummy addition to your family. And then also, I also want to thank Tracy. God has put this on my heart. And I hope at some point it gets to her. I just want you to know, Tracy, thank you. Thank you for being an angel to some people that I love so dearly. But also, I want you to know that God's love is pursuing you so much right now. Whenever you hear this or whenever you listen to it, God is after you, no matter what position you were in. But just thank you for being an angel for two people in my life that I love dearly.
Thank you.
I'm going to cry before I even get started.
Yeah,
thank you for that and that introduction. And we'll just let you take it away with your story. Yeah.
Okay. It's a lot. I've told you both. I gave you a warning. I was like, God's given me a lifetime of stories, and I lost my hair because of all the stress and trauma that I put my family through. But I got married when I was 20. My wife was 18, and she was 8 months pregnant when we were married. So Michaela was at our wedding. Not this Michaela, my Michaela was at our wedding. We joke about that, but we had her very early, and we just started our family, and it was 2003 was the moment that changed my life forever. So Michaela was born December 28th, 2000, and 2003. My life was rocked, and it rocked our entire family. I was working at a jewelry store of all places, going from a jeweler to a HVAC repairman to now a pastor. It's a wide range, but I was working at a jewelry store, and we had a wall safe. There was a safe where we kept all the expensive jewels, diamonds, gold chains. And on it had a time release bolt. It was a huge safe. Think of like a bank vault type style door. And we always kept it open for the clientele to just, if they needed to see anything. Well, there was this one night that I was working with my boss, and I had my hand on the inside of the frame, and I was just leaning against it. And I was talking to a customer that was very frequent to the store. And my boss walked by, and she bumped the door. And she didn't realize it. I didn't realize it. But slowly, the door, it was closing. And what it does is, when it closes, the bolt locks, and it's a 30-minute lockout for if we ever get robbed or anything is broken into. We just hit the door, it shuts, locks, and they can't get to the good stuff. Well, as the door's closing, I'm just talking to the customer. And all of a sudden I feel this shearing pain. The door actually hit my hand, and it would have been fine if the door would have hit my hand, like maybe some broken bones or whatever, but where my hand was located, the bolt automatically went through. And so it went into my hand, and the only thing that really captured it was the skin on the inside of my palm. I was taken to the hospital. The doctor essentially was questioning whether I could use my left hand ever again. I had to go through physical therapy, but here's where the story takes a turn. I was introduced to painkillers. Specifically hydrocodone, Vicodin. And people ask me, because, I mean, obviously the story is going into my addiction to painkillers, but people ask me, hey, was it that 6 months that the doctor had you on while you're going through physical therapy? No. It was the very first pill that I took. So the very first pill I took, I knew this is what I want. This is what I need. And it just became an obsession. Sure, my hand hurt. It helped that. But I felt like I was a better father, a better husband, a better person. And if you don't have that mindset of the addict, you may not understand that, but it's there are a lot of people out there that say, yeah, that's so true. It wasn't that I was on it for so long and I became dependent on it. It was mentally, I loved it. And of course, I loved it because, I mean, why do we sin, right? Because we like doing it. I've had family members, friends tell me, why didn't you just stop? Okay. This could be some advice for the end, but please, please do not ask someone with addiction in your family or friends, hey, just stop, because of what I'm about to get into. I didn't want this for my family. So if I could have stopped that easily, I would have stopped. But what that created was 6 years of a nightmare for my family with an addiction to any type of painkiller. So I have overdosed four times on Vicodin, one time on morphine, and one time on Oxycontin. And the first overdose that I had, I was, you know, when you start taking the medication, it says, hey, no more than 8 per day. Normally the 8 pills a day would help me with my pain and also the feeling that I had with it. But I realized that each day I needed a little bit more and more. And the first overdose that I had, there's a lot of people that don't necessarily believe me on this, but there's no reason to lie about this portion. And it's, I mean, it's the hospital records show it. They had to pump my stomach because I took 112 painkillers in a, turned out to be a 13 or 14 hour period. It wasn't a 24 hour period. I woke up in the morning and I would take 25. And then 3 hours later, I would take 27 because two more would increase that feeling that I would get. And that turned into the multiple overdoses. My wife, she suspected something was happening early on. I was able to tell her how it was making me feel. This was before any of the overdoses. And then she told me, she said, please do not be like my dad. And her dad, my wife is a walking angel. She's a miracle. She was born into a family with her dad is a drug addict. He passed away a few years ago. And her mom an alcoholic. And she said, please do not turn into my dad. Well, 6 months into my recovery, they said, hey, your hand's great. God healed. I believe God fully healed my hand. I do have a gnarly scar, which is cool for my lady out there. I was going to say the ladies, but I only got one in my life that to impress. But the doctor looked at me and he said, you don't need this medication anymore. And my brain went crazy. And I said, no, I need this. I need to have this. So I went home and I was trying to process the emotions. And all of a sudden I get a phone call and it's from my wife's father. And he asked to be my dealer. And so behind my wife's back, for about 7-8 months, her dad was my dealer. While I was still working at the jewelry store, I was still raising this. She was 3 years old at the time. Michaela was 3. And then she found out that because we had landlines, and I don't know if there's some listeners out there, there's phones that actually used to be connected to the wall with a rope to it. And I was on one end, and she suspected something, and she picked up the phone and heard us making a transaction. And that's when she found out And that was a week before the police came knocking on my door. And that was in August of 2004, I'm sorry. Because there happened to be $85,000 worth of gold and jewels missing from the jewelry store that I worked in. And I was the only one that it could be traced back to. And the reason why was the dad was cut out of the picture. And I figured out who he was dealing with. But that guy really liked diamonds and gold and jewels. So he would come in. We had no cameras in there, which is wild to me. A jewelry store with no cameras was crazy. But he would come in and he would sit across the table and we'd only have two of us working. And he would pick out what he wanted and I would hand it to him and he would just slide the pills over to me. And that's how I was able to keep my addiction going. And I would also doctor shop. So obviously I don't have a job anymore, right? But I still have an addiction. That didn't leave me. My job left me. The addiction stayed with me. And so I became, while the court system was trying to figure this whole thing out, it took a while for them because I had no record. Like I was fine before this. I never had any issues in high school. And so they're battling out in court of, okay, how much time for this amount of money? So it's months of me having this addiction. And so what I would do, and this, there are so many angels that I know that God placed around us that are unseen because, I definitely shouldn't be alive multiple times. But what I would do is I would take my baby girl, my little girl, I would take her. And we would spend all day looking for my drugs while Crystal was working an 8-to-5 job just to keep us afloat. And so I would tell my little girl that she needed to lie to mommy, that every day when mom got home, tell her that we went to the park, we did all of these things. And I just remember, like, she would say, can we not go over the hills today, Daddy? Because from Walla Walla to Tri-Cities, you would have to go over this little mountain that she called the hills. And she knew we were going to Tri-Cities. That was because Dad needed to go to different hospitals and pretend like his back hurt and so he could get this medication. It was way too easy back then to get the medication. Now I'm so grateful for the laws that they put in place. But I was able to go into a doctor's office, get a prescription, fill that prescription, take the 30-day supply all at once while I'm walking into the next doctor's office, all with my little girl by my side. And then she would get home, or we would get home, and Crystal would say, what did you guys do today? And Michaela would look at me, and I would just nod to her, and she's like, oh, we played. We just went to the park. She's 3, she's 4, she's 4.5. She trusted her dad to be her dad, and I wasn't. Ended up spending 3 months in jail for that $85,000. But right before that sentence was to be, like, it was a deal. I didn't take it to trial. I admitted everything. I'm a bad liar, except when it came to my family. When it came to the police, with the badges, I was like, I'm spilling everything. Like, I have unpaid parking tickets, and I did this and this and this. So my lawyer was like, hey, we could have gotten you less. And I was like, I'm not even concerned about that. I did it. That's how the addiction took over. Like, the addiction was running me, but I had this portion of me that when I would get caught, I was like, yes, like, the addiction, it needs to stop. But here's the thing is I couldn't stop it. And so I still had that addiction. I was running out of doctors, running out of time to be able to go back and forth. So I was able to hack into the local. There's a statute of limitations on this too. So and I'm kidding. They already know this and I've already been I've already been asked about it. Able to hack into the DEA website for all the local doctors and even in Oregon. So this was a federal crime that, and I would call pharmacies and I would pretend to be that doctor and give them the DEA number and say, this prescription is for Matthew Wyatt. Now, the first time that I did, I was so scared of calling it to be figured out. Like, I was terrified. And that I even went through the drive-through, the first one, so that if they called me on or anything, I could just zip out of there. Like, I wasn't in there. But it worked. And so every single day, I would call different pharmacies because I was taking so much of this. Well, 5 weeks into it, I ran out of pharmacies and because of the amount that I was taking. And so I gave them a different name. I said Chris Wyatt. So for Crystal, I just shortened it to Chris Wyatt. The pharmacy actually called the doctor because I forgot to give her birth date. It's one thing I forgot. And so when I showed up there, I saw the pharmacist on the phone. Like, he gave a weird look, ran and grabbed the phone. I had my baby girl with me. So I put her in the car seat and I took off. I was gone. And I get a phone call from my wife saying, where are you? They're coming to arrest you. And my phone was on speaker and my baby girl in the back seat just started bursting out in tears because she knew what that meant, that I was going away. And luckily, throughout this process, we met a detective that really fell in love with Michaela and was like a grandfather figure to Crystal and Michaela. And he showed up and allowed Crystal to take Michaela because she could have easily been taken by the state of Washington because of what I was doing, what I was putting her through. And they were able to drive around the corner as they drove out of sight. Danny handcuffed me. And the day that I was supposed to be sentenced was the for the first crime was the day that I was arrested for prescription fraud. So now I'm facing 10 years in prison. And unseen angels, this judge could have sentenced me to 10 years. And he had already sentenced me for 3 months for the theft. He had to do that. But for this prescription fraud, he could have done federal. He could have done all of this. But he looked at me and he said, I don't think you're a bad person. I just think that you got caught up in something that you have no control over. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you home to your family after your 3 months is up. And we'll give you 6 months worth of work crew where on the weekends you clean highways. And I was like, man, deal. Well, if I wouldn't have come home when I did, I wouldn't have a wife right now because she had already bought the divorce papers and I couldn't blame her. I mean, she found out what I was putting her little girl through. She found out I was taking her to trap houses to meet shady drug dealers, people in our car with my baby girl in there. And people may listen to this and say, man, what a dirtbag. Yes, I was a dirtbag. I was like, I was all those things. That's what addiction did to me. I'm not blaming the store for the injury. I'm not blaming the addiction. I made the choice, the active choice to continue doing this. But there was something that I would pray every night. I'd pray every night, God, take this addiction away from me. And in the morning, as soon as my wife would go to work, I was getting my little girl ready to go out and get more. But I was released from jail and my wife had bought divorce papers. And if I had stayed in jail any longer, even 2 weeks longer, those would have been sent to me in jail. Everything would have been. But she said that, and I hope you guys get to interview her. She is amazing. She said when I got out that she saw the sober part of me because I couldn't do the pills in while I was in jail. I know a lot of people could sneak in drugs, but it was like, I felt this, and this may sound so weird, but when those cell doors closed, I felt as free as I have ever been in the last year and a half, because I knew that I could no longer pursue this addiction. I knew that I was locked up, and I felt so free. Like there's so much freedom in that. And you may think that's this paradox, but in the mind of an addict, it rings so true. When you are locked away, I felt so free. And so I came home and I felt this freedom. And my wife gradually got to know the sober Matt. And she said, I feel like I have my husband back. And luckily, she didn't sign those divorce papers. 8 months into this, I was sober for 8 months. And each month was a milestone. And then one day I got bored. And that's all it took for me. One day I got bored. I woke up and said, I really don't want to go to work today. I was working HVAC in Tri-Cities and had a really good job, paid more than I had ever been paid before, but I just wanted to call in sick. And I wanted to hang out with my baby girl. So we canceled the babysitter and I had her. And within a few hours, just that enemy was tapping me on the shoulder of saying, hey, you remember me? Do you remember what's going on? And I was like, you know what? I could do it one more time. I could do it one more time. Well, it turns out on this work crew, I met a dealer. That's why he was on work crew, because he dealt painkillers. So I called him and said, hey, are you still in the business? And I said, I just need a few. That's it. I just had the day off. Well, that turned into the worst portion of my addiction. We moved to California so that I could get away from the mess. I thought by moving states that things would change. But everywhere I went, there I was. Like, I would look in the mirror and be like, oh, there's the monster right there. And the, another angelic moment was my third overdose was, in the Sacramento airport parking lot. I was waiting for my wife to get off a plane, and I had my baby girl in the back seat, and she was six at the time, so she was in a booster seat, but I OD'd while my wife was, the plane was landing. And luckily, my wife found me and not somebody else, because once again, I would have lost my baby girl to the state of California. My wife came out into the parking lot to see why I hadn't been there to pick her up, and she sees her husband slumped over the steering wheel with vomit all over, and she has to rush me to the hospital. None of that stopped me. I kept going. And I hated myself. Like, I hated what I was doing to my family. I hated what I was doing to myself. I hated what I was doing to... I kept losing job after job after job. And it was all because of my addiction. So July 20th, 2009 is a day that... it's etched on my heart. It's a day that I woke up with no hope. And a man or a woman with no hope is a dangerous person. I woke up and I said, today is the day that I'm going to take my life. I walked out, because at this time, there's a lot more to my story. And I know that we could do multiple sessions. The last 2 years of my addiction, alcohol was introduced because I couldn't take enough pills to satisfy that urge. So I would take the pills during the day, and at night I would end with a bottle of vodka, an entire bottle of those little $3, $4 bathtub, just so gross. Because it would numb everything. And I just wanted to be numb. I had no idea why. I hated seeing what I was doing to everyone around me. So I would get home and I would have that hidden in my sock. I would never drink during work or anything like that. It was always at night. And so I would get home to shower. I would go in and I would drink the entire bottle all at once. And then I would shower, I'd brush my teeth, and then I'd come out with just one beer and be like, hey, babe, look, I'm sober. I'm just having one tonight. And then I'd be passed out on the couch and then wake up and rinse and repeat. And this is the nightmare that my family was going through. And July 20th, 2009, I woke up and for once, I realized the true monster that I had become. And so I knew that was the day that I had to leave this earth. It was also the day that my wife had in her heart to leave me and to get divorce papers again. I walked out and she said, we're done. And in the middle was this pile of empty vodka bottles, because when I would drink it, I would just put it in the rain gutter thinking, hey, tomorrow I'll get it when she's not looking. Michaela was swinging on the swing and she got higher and higher and said, Mom, there's something on the roof. And Crystal got the ladder out and the entire rain gutter was filled with bottles of vodka, empty bottles of vodka. So she had those there and she said, I can't do this. It's been so long. I need to protect our girl. I'm done. I'm going to take her to my grandma's and I need you to be gone by the time we get home tomorrow. And in my head, I was like, man, this worked out because I will be gone. Today's the day that I'm going to leave. And that day was the day that she was leaving me. And so I was like, perfect. Like there was something, it was meant to be. So she left with Michaela, went to her grandma's house, and I set a time of 5:45. And the reason that I set the time is because I wanted to go through with it. I knew that if I didn't set a time, I would be like, okay, I'll get to it later and later. I'd said, no, 5:45, I'm going to go into the garage and I'm going to take my life. And at 5 o'clock, I called my wife and she was at her grandma's house, which is 35 minutes away. And I didn't call her to say goodbye or some cryptic, I love you. Let me hear my baby girl's voice one more time. Because I didn't want her to stop me. So all I said was, did you make it there okay? And she said, yes, I made it okay. I need you to be gone tomorrow. And I said, I will be. I said, I'll get myself. We'll figure this out. Like, I didn't want her to stop me. So at 5:40, I walk out into the garage. And I'm blaming God for this. Like, I'm screaming out, blank you. To God, because I felt like this problem was too big for him, that no one could help me with this, and God sure as heck couldn't help me with this. So I blame God. And as I was walking out, we walked through our laundry room to get to our garage. And the only note I left my girls was a suicide note in the front page of this Bible. You can see it's a little ragged, but I'm never letting this go. I wrote my suicide note in the front portion of that Bible, as at the time was essentially a middle finger to God. And I went out into the garage, and at 5:43, I threw over the extension cord around the beams of the garage. And I still remember to this day that there was like wood chips and dust that hit my eyes, and I went to wipe them away, and I realized how hard I was crying. And I didn't. It shocked me how hard I was crying. But also in that moment, I completely shut off the crying, because I felt this peace come over me of, in 2 minutes, my wife and my daughter are going to be free of this monster, and they can live their life the way that they're intended to be. But so I get everything ready. I'm taking a step off the chair with no one knowing. I did text my drug dealer after I called my wife, because I wanted him to come in and find my body and not have my girls find my body. And I'm sorry if that's graphic, but it's real. That's where I was at. And I was literally taking a step off the chair, and the garage door started to open. And this angel just came in the form of my wife. And I hit the ground. She comes over to me and she said, something told me to come home. And I know what that is. I know that was God speaking to her through the Holy Spirit. She's my angel. But if she was early, I would have waited for her to leave and I would have gone through with it. If she was late, I wouldn't be here right now. And now this Bible is the same Bible that I preach out of and I bring to meetings with other people who are struggling with addiction. And where I share my story. There's so much to what happened. It was like jumping off a 30-story building and someone catching you 3 inches from the ground. I was fully prepared to leave this earth. Like I was going to leave. I was gone. And my wife, through God, caught me 3 inches from the ground and gave me my next breath. And the next day I checked myself into a rehab, happened to be a faith-based rehab. I called six, only one called back, and the one that called back wanted to talk about Jesus. And I was like, okay, God, you have a sense of humor, because if I was God and this bratty little kid was shouting all this stuff at him, and then writing a message in the Bible, this holy book that I hold, and I'm glad that he's God and I'm not. But God had so much love for my family in that moment. And my thing was, I was angry at first because I was like, God, I've tried everything to leave this earth. Like I've OD'd six different times. My thought was I either get high or I die and I'm okay with either one. I tried taking my life. Why am I here? And then it all came back to, just sit with me, son. I felt that voice come over me. Just sit with me, son. And for 90 days, I was away again. But this time it was for daddy to get better. And not because he was forced to by the state of Washington. This was a place, it was called Hope, Help, and Healing. And it did every single one of those. So it gave me hope. It gave me help and it gave me healing. And I want the listeners to know this. Addiction does not discriminate. Addiction doesn't discriminate. So if you're going through it or you have family members, I grew up in such a loving home. Like the everything was so loving. I grew up, I married into this family that seemed perfect, and still this addiction was after me. And so I want the listeners to give grace to those who are in it, but also tough love is really needed too. And my wife, she protected our girl from a monster for a while. And I look at when the Bible says that he will make you new, transforms you, the renewal of your heart and your mind. I look at the old Matt, the pre-2009 Matt, as a dead and gone, and God has given me a new life. I'm a new creation in Christ. And there's nothing I can do to deserve it. Like I did nothing. If you think about it, I did nothing. The best I could do was divorce, overdose, and trying to take my life. There's no possible reason I should be here right now except for the angels in my life and for God himself. And I remember this one moment Michaela, when she was seven, she came up to me and I was on the couch. And I was not in my right mind, but she turned my face to look at her, and I was just looking at her beautiful blue eyes, and she said, Dad, I hate you. Calm as can be. Calm as can be. It wasn't out of anger. We didn't just have an argument, but she said, Dad, I hate you, and I want you to leave the family. And that still didn't stop me. Now, fast forward, this is how... why Michaela is an angel in my life. She asked me to go to Red Robin when she was like 13, because 2009, when I tried taking my life, it was right before her 9th birthday. Not right before, a few months before that. So she was 8 at the time. Fast forward, man, I'm sober, I'm healthy. The addiction is done and gone. I'm actually a pastor now, which at that time was ludicrous to me. I'm like, how would you let this guy become, like, talk about God? And I had someone, another angel in my life, my pastor said, who better to tell people about the grace and love of God than someone who's been through hell and back like you have? And I was like, I've never heard that before, like, put in such a way. But my baby girl, I call her my mini, she said, Daddy, can we go to Red Robin? And I was like, okay. And she was sitting across the table from me, and she seemed nervous. And I said, what's going on? And she said, I need to ask you a favor. And I said, okay. And she goes, do you remember that day that I told you I hated you and I wanted you to leave the family? And I said, yes, I do. She said, hey, Daddy, will you forgive me? And I broke, and I was like, are you kidding me? Like, you don't need forgiveness for saying that. You don't need forgiveness for saying that. You, like, any child could have said that to a monster of a father, but she knew that her dad's heart needed that at that moment. But we had this bonding moment where it all came full circle of this monster of a dad to now my dad is there and he's present and I want forgiveness from him. And it just blew me away. That moment was another angelic moment in my life that pushed me towards, like, I want to be who she needs me to be. I know I'm talking a lot, but I'm fast forwarding. She was Michaela, her senior year. She had to do a project on who her hero was. And she came home and she said, hey, I got an A on this project. And I looked at the project and the title, Who My Hero Is. She said, my hero is Jesus because she gave my daddy back to me. Mm-hmm. And there was another moment where I was like, God, why, you know, the mess that I made actually turned into his message. The tests that I went through became like, this is God's story. Like, I can't claim it. This is all God's story. Fast forward again to 2018, where the doctors couldn't believe that my body was still functioning with the amount of painkillers and the alcohol that was going through my body. They couldn't figure it out. Like, I would go through scans and tests and they were like, everything's fine. Either you're lying to us, which you're not because we can see all these hospital records. Or there's one doctor said that you have a guardian angel that's working overtime in your life. And I was like, yeah, it's that one right there. But, 2018, I was speaking at it was like my dream job, my dream calling. I was able to share my story at the high school I graduated from. And I was able to bring Jesus into it in a school. And that's not common, but I was able to do that. I was able to share about suicide awareness and addiction. And about 5 minutes before I'm done, I felt like an explosion in the lower portion of my gut. Like, everything inside felt like something was tearing apart. And I finished the talk and I'm trying to talk to students that are coming up that have struggles with addiction. But, I get home and I'm thinking that I can find my way through it. And finally I can't. And my wife takes me to the doctor and, they had to, cut and remove and sew up 17 inches of my lower intestine and my colon because it just broke open. And that was from the years of the abuse that just wasn't caught. 2 weeks after that surgery, I get home and all of a sudden I'm not feeling well. My wife goes to the store to get some food and she comes back and she finds me in the bathroom with a puddle of blood all around me. And I'm the surgery, it actually broke open and I was bleeding out on the bathroom floor. Here's where another angel comes in. The key fob to our SUV, because the ambulance would have taken too long. Key fob had died. So we don't have a vehicle. My wife calls a friend. She gets there within a minute. I mean, she's there within a minute. They load me into the vehicle and I don't remember much. All I know now is my blood pressure was 39 or 51. That's how much blood.
Oh my God.
Blood I had lost. And I was in ICU for 3 days. I had two blood transfusions. They were able to fix everything. But my lab work was crazy. And we're going to fast forward real quick again to 2023. So this is 14 years. One of my friends makes a post about needing a kidney. And I knew what the doctor said about my lab work and everything, everything I put my body through. So I knew I couldn't be a candidate, but I knew I could pray for an angel to step up. That's what I knew I could pray for. And it just kept coming into dreams and dreams of like this kidney thing. And I was like, yeah, God, give this guy, let someone step up and give him a kidney. He needs it. And then one night I had this vivid dream where a white hand came out of the darkness and into my, it was almost like into my chest / stomach area. And it was indescribable, but the hand wrapped around my kidney and I heard the words, "This one is mine." And I was like, I woke up and I told my wife, "I think I'm supposed to get tested to see if I can give this person a kidney." And she's like, wait, hold on a second. This is a whole process. This isn't just let's get a kidney and you get a kidney. No, that wasn't like this. This was a whole thing. But so I go to the doctor in New York and I'm flying there on my own dime because I feel like God has told me this person needs your kidney. And before I even get started, the doctor said, you're about to go through about 14 hours of the hardest battery of tests possible. I've seen your lab work from 2018. I've seen what you went through in 2009 and previous, the blood transfusion, the addiction, all of that. You have a 0.005% chance of being able to donate an organ. Do you want to go through with today? Because it's going to be extremely strenuous. And I said, God has me here for a reason. Let's just do it. I get a call 2 weeks later and they said, we can't explain this, but you are a 100% match with this person. And I broke down in tears. I called him. He had to pull over. He is breaking down in tears. So we set a date of March 10th, 2024, where I would go in, they would take my kidney out, they would clean the room, he would go in, they would put my kidney right in him, and we would recover together. It was about 2 weeks before we were to fly to New York, and we get a phone call from New York, and they said, we want to do a Zoom call with you and Shelby. Shelby is my friend's name, and he wouldn't mind that I use this, his name. But they said, hey, Shelby, have you had a recent injury of any sort? And he said, well, one of my scars from previous kidney, because this would have been his fourth kidney, because he was born, he's 47 years old, but he was born with just everything all jumbled up and a lot of issues. So he was on his fourth kidney, he was going through dialysis. And one of his scars with the elastic of his pants just rubbed, and it caused an opening and his immune system to spike. And they said, "We've been through this for 20 years with you. We have never found this antibody until now. And I hate to tell you this, but if you were to give, or if you were to get Matt's kidney, not only would it kill his kidney, this antibody that we just found, not only would it kill the kidney, but it may kill you." And I was thinking, and like the emotional toll that it would have taken on me if I would have lost my friend after this. But they looked at me and they said, "Do you still want to go through with this?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And they said, "There are people out there who need a kidney. If you are willing to donate a stranger, then Shelby can be placed on the top of the list. And he's guaranteed within a year to be able to get this kidney." And I said, "Let's do it." And I called Shelby, and he's another angel in my life. I called Shelby, and I was in tears. I was like, "I'm so sorry." And he's like, "What are you talking about? Now you get to bless two families instead of just one." And I was like, "Okay, that's one way to look at it." So we're in New York, and all I get is, it's a 25-year-old girl from Kentucky. And I said, "Okay." And I'm there a week before the surgery. Then I get a phone call, and they said, "We need you in here within the next half hour." And I was like, "Okay, like, what's going on?" I get there, and they said, "That girl came down with a sickness. She can't receive a kidney right now. And I'm praying that that girl has received a kidney since then." But it wasn't like a horrible sickness. It was just like the flu, that she couldn't go through the process of doing it. They said, "There's another young girl in Connecticut. We just need some blood work from you." So March 10th, last year, I was able to donate the kidney. It's extremely difficult to do when you have let every doctor know that you can't touch pain medication. So in the hospital itself, yes, but afterwards, man, fighting through that pain, I would do it all over again, because I received a letter from this girl, which you're not allowed. There's a blackout period. You're not allowed to know who this person is, because if that person doesn't, their body doesn't accept a kidney, you're not emotionally attached to this person. Well, the hospital gets this letter, and it's a letter I'll just cherish forever, but it was this young girl from Connecticut that she was on renal failure. They said that she was weeks away from passing away. But she wrote in after she got my kidney. She wrote in and she said to my angel, "Thank you for this gift that you have given me. This is the first time that I'm able to hold my baby girl."
Mm.
And there's absolutely no rhyme or reason except for God himself that I was able to get through the addiction. I'm able to speak life into other people who have gone through it. I mean, that's what I pledged my life to, is just one more. Every morning I pray, I wake up and I say, "God, just one more. Just one more person who's addicted to something that I can speak life into, or just one more person that's on the verge of giving up in life. Just put them in my life so I can speak truth and speak love into their life." But that's where I'm at right now. I have a beautiful wife that she's been given the gift of a husband that is just loves Jesus and loves her. That's all it's about. And Michaela is a walking miracle. My angel, to go through what she went through. At such a formative age, like everything that happened with her, and to still love her dad. I mean, that's a miracle in itself right there. But getting to even this podcast, there are so many angels, seen and unseen, mostly unseen, because, I mean, I was protected at every single moment to even get to this point. And I know that God saved my life for a purpose and a meaning and a message. Like, he doesn't waste anyone's pain. But, yeah, that's my story is, I once was really, really lost and broken, and now I'm found by a loving God.
I feel like I've read about a story like that somewhere before.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to touch on one thing that you said, that in the society we live in, it gets so lost, this thought. But you said, I want to be who she needs me to be, talking about your daughter, Angel.
Yeah.
And we live in a world that teaches us to be who we want to be. And if I were to be the person that I want to be, if I wanted to do all the things that I wanted to do all the time, I wouldn't have the things that I have in life. I need to be the person who she needs me to be. I need to be the person who my two kids need me to be, who my parents need me to be, who ultimately my Father in heaven needs me to be. None of that is what I want. I want to go golfing right now. I want to go in the mountains. I want to go play some poker, or, you know, there's so many wants and desires that I have that don't align with what she needs, what my kids need, and what God needs. And so that really touched me when you said that you said, I want to be who she needs me to be.
Yeah.
And that's a powerful realization.
Yeah. I'm the same way. If I wanted to be who I wanted to be for my wife and daughter, I wouldn't have a family right now. Like, I literally have to die to self. The Bible teaches us to love your bride like Christ loved the church. Which, what did he do? He died for us. And so I, every day, do I, am I batting 1,000? No, I'm not even Hall of Fame numbers. Right? Like, there's days where I'm like, man, I can't believe that she even still loves me, but, she is my angel. She is my walking angel, but I have to be who God needs me to be. I live my life one way, and it's up, in, and out. So I start my day and I end my day up, in, and out, which means up, I look at God, look at him, his word, what direction he's guiding me. I just have this vertical relationship with him. And then I look in and say, what portions of my heart don't line up with this? Or what does he need me to do? And by doing that, everything pours out into my family, friends, strangers, anyone I can meet, anyone I can share this story with, which you can promote my Facebook, because I talk about God, I talk about Jesus a lot, just Matthew White. And if you're friends with Brent, then, and Michaela, then you'll see that's the right Matthew White. I don't even know what my profile pic is, but anyways.
We'll make sure to let everyone know. We'll drop it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so many unseen angels God has blessed me with that I just thank him so much, because I don't deserve any of it. I don't deserve any of this. And to be able to wreck myself in such a way, and then to give a piece of myself away to someone else, it still doesn't make sense to me. And I look at it three ways. The scars are in the front of my Bible, in my suicide note. The scars are on my hand, showing me my addiction. And the scars are in my stomach from the gift that I was able to give this young girl who's able to hold her daughter for the first time, which, yeah, God is so good. God's really good.
I want to touch on one other thing. And this can be, and we spoke about it a little bit on Heidi's episode, so listeners, you might have heard this, but it can be really hard for people to hear stories of people being saved when they have loved ones who haven't been saved. And this thought just came into my mind when we were talking that, and this could totally be just my thought process, maybe something to kind of give me some answers, but that you could have been saved because you weren't anywhere close to the person who God needed you to be yet, right? He still had a lot of work to do. You still had a lot of work to do. And maybe a lot of those other loved ones that have gone, for some of you listeners, maybe they were already in a position where they were ready to go be with God. Maybe they were who God needed them to be. Maybe they had done what God needed them to do. And none of that makes any loss easier, right? It doesn't. But maybe it can just give a little bit of peace, I hope.
Yeah, and I've done funerals for people, for family members of overdose of suicide, and I don't understand why God saved me. But then I get to the mindset of, if I could fully understand God, I wouldn't follow him, because I need a God so much bigger than my small-minded brain, a God that knows the end from the beginning, counts every hair on your head, which I'm making it a lot easier for him. But if I could fully understand why I'm here, I wouldn't follow that kind of God. God is so big and so vast that I don't have the answers on why I'm able to speak to somebody. And there's been, I'm not even kidding, probably over 100, I'd say probably, but it is, over 100 calls where someone is literally at that point I was on July 20th, 2009, with either a gun in their hand, a bottle in their hand, or in one instance, ready to take a leap off of something. And I'm able to just talk to them in a way that now I'm able to call these people just friends. And it's all just the same way with you guys. You're able to reach some people that you will have no idea about until we get to heaven, or until 10 years from now, they could be like, hey, I just want to let you guys know your story changed my life. And I believe that's why I won't shut up about what I went through. And I've had people in my life say, can you not be as open about your past? Because it kind of brings some shame to certain family members. And I say, but it really brings a lot of glory to God. So I'm not, and if it can save one more person, that's all I need, is just one more person. And that's my prayer every morning. Just one more, God. Just one more. Because I don't want anyone to go through the heartache that my family went through, the pain that I put them through, that I was feeling, and the uncontrollable desire of just wickedness, of evil, of wreckage in my life. I don't want anyone to be able to go through that. And I know it happens. If I can just be a little bit of light to someone, then I'm okay with that. It wouldn't change anything. In my wife's words, and she'll say this, someone asked her, what about your past would you change if you could? And my wife said some beautiful words of wisdom. She said, I wouldn't change a thing, because we wouldn't be where we are right now without the past. So that's us. That's me. She has more eloquent way of sharing the pain that she went through. But she's my angel. She's my angel. My daughter's my angel. My brother, Eric, huge shout out, my brother, Eric. He was an angel in my life that, as gigantic as he is at 6'7", 270 pounds, or 250, sorry, bro, whatever it is. But, he loved me at my lowest. And, I'll never be able to repay that except just God sent me the angels that I needed. And some of them I was able to identify, but a lot of them I can't.
Well, I know that you are going to be an angel to many after listening to this.
Thank you.
You have really touched our hearts, and I just can't thank you enough for sharing and being so vulnerable and open, because we do need it. And there's so many that are alone that just need to hear that they're not. So if anyone is going through this or something similar, what is some advice that you would give them?
Or to other family members that
have
loved ones going through similar stuff.
If you think God's grace will run out, you don't understand God's grace and love. Like it's bottomless. There's so much love and so much grace. I'm sorry for those who are put in a position to be hurt by addiction. I just want you to know that you're loved. There is help out there for family members of addicts. And if you are an addict yourself, I just urge you, turn to somebody and share it just by opening your mouth and explaining it. And if you get shame and guilt from that person's not for you. Go to the next person. Don't let it stop you. Go to the next person. And if you have to go through 100 people to get to that one person that will understand you and accept you for who you are and then help you get your way out of that, keep going. I just want you to keep going and know that there is a God that is pursuing you and loves you, and his grace and his forgiveness is unlimited. You just need to turn. I mean, the Hebrew definition of repentance is turn. So I'm asking all of you who are in the midst of a depression where you want to end it, or an addiction where you don't think that you can get away, turn. Turn your eyes to Christ and watch how he can change your entire world.
Amen. Well, there was a whole lot of truth in that right there. But if there's anything else, something that you know to be true and you'd like to leave it with our listeners, what is it?
For me, it's God is everything. Jesus is everything to me. There's nothing that I can do to the finished work on the cross and the empty tomb. And he moved mountains to get to a schmuck like me, because he loved me so much. He loves me so much that he wanted me to be part of his family, even through my brokenness, even through my addiction, even through the faults that I put myself into. God didn't put me into an addiction, but he is using the after effects. But the truth that I have is, let God love you, because he came and moved mountains to get to me. And he was always there. He was there in that garage that day. He was there protecting my daughter in every place we went to. But I just want you to know that there's a purpose for what you've been through. There's a purpose for what you are in right now. Just turn and let him love you, because he so badly wants you to be a part of his family.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, When we are waiting, God is working.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.